Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
And welcome to the show. This is Saul Rosenberg. It's 101.9 Hi FM. You're with on the People in Perspective show. Thanks for joining us. Every week we discuss people in business and people in the working environment. We often look at HR. Sometimes we look at psychology issues, and normally we've got a very inspiring guest to have on the show. We had last week we had Yochi Rez, who came on and spoke about how to overcome the confronting some of the issues that we are in this age of AI. He's a psychologist, so he gave us some ideas to cope with all these new challenges. So basically we spoke about coming up with new ways of confronting the endless amount of information, endless amount of data, and exposure to media, and just lots of people and you know, excessive amounts of information that we seem to be now in. This is the stage of that society is now in. So how do we now, it seems to be an unprecedented stage that we're at. I don't think we've ever sort of been at the point where we've had so much information thrown at us. And we've really been in the situation now, I think, for the first time, you know. You know, I'd love to hear from you if you think in history, if there's ever been a time where we had this boundless, endless possibility, you know, where anything is possible. And there's really, you know, no limits to what we're being told. And the downside of that is that there are just no boundaries, there are no limits. So essentially nothing can take shape and in life. So without boundaries, nothing has a shape. I think that's the problem that we've got at the moment, you know. And society where we are sitting with, you know, new parameters in business. I'm going to have my usual guest on a little bit later. That's Evan Kagan. We're going to talk a little bit about people experience and just really get into some employee focused stuff, employee experiential stuff. You know, Evan's the first to really sort of he's the first to sort of talk about how the paradigm is changing within companies, and really to just get everybody on the boat, where you know, in the past we've been clinging to so-called Tayloristic siloed ideas of high structure and segregation and isolation of disciplines, and this opening up of boundaries really that we've got now in the world where everything is instantaneous, everything has to be sort of experienced, and it has to all be, it's all happening now, and it's all now, which is pretty much, you know, the logical conclusion of what happened in the millennium. It's basically instantaneous culture. Instant gratification is the negative side effect of that. But the positive is that we're switched on, and we're on all the time. You know, anybody born sort of after 2000 or just around 2000, you know, they speak a different language. I mean, I'm sure you've experienced that. So today we're going to be talking a little bit about, you know, staying within the theme of adapting to this new world that we're in. We will sort of probably get to a bit of AI. I want to talk about AI. You know, everybody's talking about AI. you know, I think the crest of that wave is about to sort of sort of really about to break. The first crest of the AI wave is now arriving, to say AI is here, but what is it really going to mean for us? We'll talk a little bit about that. So I think what is new for us is that we've got a WhatsApp number that you can reach us on. Craig's just going to give it to me now. I think it's now easier for you to get in touch with us. We're not using a Telegram portal anymore. We've got a WhatsApp number. I want to ask you if you are experiencing, you know, at your company, you know, challenges that involve, you know, the dissolving of boundaries that you used to have, no longer. Is that an issue that you are sort of confronting currently in your work environment? Are you being challenged to face up to these new parameters? Have you met with HR recently? Have you had a meeting with HR in the last few weeks, where you've had a discussion about your experience as an employee? These are some of the questions that I'm asking you. If you had any of them, you know, let us know. It's 061-895-1019. 061-895-1019. So it's, I think an interesting time for us all in the working environment. And as we change into this new era of robots and AI and machine learning, we've got new behaviors that we have to learn. Psychology people will be able to, the best people to ask about that. I think Evan's got a psychology qualification. Evan, you've got a psychology qualification?
No, not a master's. I've got an undergrad in part of it. I mean, part of my courses in business science did have psychology in it, but no, I'm not a psychologist.
Yeah, but you do understand a bit of psychology, though.
Yeah. Sure, I do speak to people.
Yeah. So, I think I'm going to kick us off with employee experience. Really, what I want to talk about today is the linkage between what happens inside the company and what happens outside the company. What we're trying to do is keep the experience consistent. From an HR point of view, this is what any HR person would be saying, is that how are we working on an employee experience? You know, are you an HR person perhaps working on your employee experience? Let us know. You know, I'm happy to talk to you about that. I've delivered a few presentations on employee experience, and it's a growth and emerging field. But really, you know, it's to get a feel for things that happen in the workplace. I mean, I'm going to talk to Evan, you know, like things that have happened to you this week, Evan. I mean, you know, just things that have just come up for you in your work environment. What are some of the things that are coming up?
So I think, Saul, one of the main things that always happens with staff is this lack of transparency, or that space to really grow your work in a trusting environment. So I'm not going to say it was this week, but very, you know, recently there was a particular employee where they're pretty new to the organization, but ultimately they really wanted to explore new areas in terms of what they believe they could grow, and they were in a sense silenced in that process.
We're going to leave it there for a minute and go to an ad break. We'll be back shortly.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're in the People in Perspective show. This is 101.9 Chai FM. Welcome to the show if you just joined us. You can get in touch with us on 061-895-1019. That's the WhatsApp number, 061-895-1019. We're talking about basically experiences that people are currently having at work. I'm starting very sort of generally, but we want to, this show is going to be about the experience the employee has. And we want to try and see that where that gets matched to the experience that the customer has. Because ultimately, what HR wants is that the employee experience matches the customer experience. But Evan's busy talking about what's been happening in the work environment this week. Evan, you were saying.
Yes, I don't say this week. Maybe someone's listening that they may think that I'm talking about them. But I think in general, employees need to have an understanding as to who to turn to for what. What is the clarity of my role? What are the working agreements that I have with other divisions? What are their expectations of me? Without that, what happens is people become quite insecure and therefore cagey and anxious. And this leads to people being very protective about information and not willing to share, because from the outset, from the orientation, in essence, they're not welcomed in a very transparent and sharing way. And I find pretty much every single company, be it large or small, that I work with, they really have this type of issue. And I mean, Saul, from your side, internal communications, you know, you're an expert in this area. How would you deal with that? What do you do?
Well, you know, it depends on the culture of the company. And when you sign up for a job, you go through some testing and screening through HR talent people are supposed to test. That whole process is there to test that you are in fact the right person for this company. You know, so there shouldn't be, after that initial test is done, there shouldn't really, if it's done properly, there shouldn't be any real sort of tension, you know. But if everything is frequencied out, you know, in terms of what's supposed to happen and isn't. But often that doesn't happen, and things come to the fore when you're in a job. You start to show different kinds of behavior when you start to work, because there's different demands on you. I understand that. You know, I would say, you know, I would like to approach it from the point of collaboration. If somebody's got some new ideas and it's not really part of their job description, I would say first, look at your job description. First of all, what are the ideas? Depends what those ideas are. You know, if they are in contravention of your job description, you know, cross off the labor relations stuff first and say, okay, are you basically doing any of this stuff? Is it going to contravene your contract or anything? If it doesn't, then it's just a case of saying, all right, well, let's find an avenue with somebody you can work with. Maybe it can become an extra, an extra sort of experiential thing for employees to engage with after work, and be linked to a sort of enjoyment factor that's not directly involved with work if it's not a direct fit, you know. But the point is to encourage that innovative thinking and not kill it, because that's where companies are supposed to be going now, as I understand.
So here's my take on the job description. And also, in fact, let me take one step back around the testing concept. I think it's essential. You want to see that there's a fit.
Yeah.
But one of the things I am accredited with is a tool called Lumina, which is really your kind of psychometric assessment around, you know, your persona and how you show up in work. Now, a test will give you a certain persona, or how I'm showing up as I'm putting on my best show, I'm digging deep intellectually, also being earnest around, you know, the competency framework around the psychology of who I am, because there's different tests under the batteries. But what I'm thinking is that under Lumina, you've got your underlying persona, which is how you are at home, in your natural state. Then there's how you show up at work, which is quite different often from how you are at home. And then there's your overextended persona, which is I'm feeling stressed and I act in a certain way. So from a testing perspective, I think it only gives us a certain view. In fact, I was talking to a particular company this week around their tests and how they feel that they're still getting the wrong fit, because the organization has chosen a certain type of battery, which is only looking at the competencies as opposed to psychology. Psychological competencies. So they want to see, oh, is he an A-type personality? Is she a whatever type of personality? And they keep on hiring the same type of person, because that's the only type of person that can pass this type of test.
Yeah.
So they're getting a certain thing, and it's causing a lot of tension and a one-tracked view of how to push this organization forward. And so organizations really need to think about what are they measuring when they bring someone in. Can I just continue for one more second on the job description now? The job description, in my opinion, is very good for grading purposes. I think you need it for grading, especially in large organizations. However, how many times, and this is where I call organizational debt, how often do we actually go and look at that job description again? Maybe once a year, potentially, if you want to have someone who's going to fill my space or I'm moving up the rank, I need to find someone. Oh, what? It's all about how do you create a fluid form of jobbing. Every 3 months, I may be building on it. It may actually change. It may morph. As I'm building a disruptive organization, my role will also be disrupted. So just something to think about that. I don't know. Any thoughts on that in your mind?
I mean, are you saying that you can build, you have a hand in building your own job description?
100%. I think traditional, we talk about Tayloristic approach. The job description, do things as the way I say it should be done. And that's it. What that does is it disengages your employees. You talk about employee experience. It's another one of those levers which engages people. We need to really be thinking about how do we engage, how do we allow people to be creative and bring the best out of them, right? Hiring the right people, acquiring them, and then letting them thrive and strive in this, in an organization.
So I think that's an exciting idea. You know, if you, you know, if anybody listening, if you've really, are you struggling to understand your own job description? Are you somebody who works on other people's job descriptions? Is the job description in your life? Basically, what Evan is saying is that having a certain amount of space in order to innovate is essential in the company in our modern times. You've got to give people a certain amount of space to create their own work as opposed to being delegated 100%. So we say, like, the percentage of innovation in the last 5 years has gone from, say, 5% 10 years ago to how much, what percentage would you say it's at now?
Well, it's exponential, right? I mean, we've got lots of robotics, RPAs, AI coming in, so that innovates our space. There's a lot of time saving and therefore allowing people to be more creative, as we've spoken to before in another show. I think that the main thing is that we need to have purpose in mind. What is the purpose of my role, which is aligned to my, obviously, my direct line? And what is that purpose aligned to the overarching organizational purpose? Then allows us to start to play around and to have fun in innovating and to, in a sense, make mistakes, you know, fail forward concept. It needs a more mature environment. And I'm saying in South Africa, you know, when I speak to clients of mine from Nigeria and Kenya specifically, they are they really are pushing the boundaries in Africa. South Africa, which is the majority of my clients, are a little bit more traditional. And it's taking, you need to break the boundaries by starting small with small teams, try something new just within a safe environment, and then that starts to take. When you start to show real high solid KPI metrics that you're achieving, then that starts to kind of wildfire around the rest of the organization, starts to rapid fire and connect.
So it's basically experimentation which becomes habit, which then becomes, depending on how successful it is, then it then becomes management orientated. It becomes normal. After that, it becomes policy. I mean, it's just like a process that it goes through.
Let's not make it policy, right? The point is, Saul, you're exactly right. But I just want to, like, in my opinion, what I'm seeing, the traditional approach would certainly have, you know, let's prove that it works. But an evolutionary organization is set up to continually improve, to monitor, have solid KPIs that are also moving, but you are likely to go and not hit the target. I'm currently working with a client in the gambling industry, for example, that's got to hit a serious market share improvement, and they're pretty good in the billions of dollars in terms of revenue. But they're working on a process now where we're doing sprints, agile methodology, right? So we're hitting a certain sprint where in our second round now, where we're starting to slowly lift the needle. First round of sprints, we kind of got foundations ready. And then now we're starting to see a bit of improvement. And it's not perfect. That's the point. You're never going to be perfect. Disruptive organizations are not into perfection. They're into progress. They're always looking where to improve. They've got high metrics, tracked, and they're pushing the boundaries all the time. And employees who see this as their purpose and their mandate get very excited, and they start to do something which maybe they wouldn't even thought themselves capable to do.
That's incredible. I think it's the opportunity to be able to do that. You know, a lot of people don't even know what a sprint is. I mean, for your listeners out there, it's basically the agile IT environment has developed into a framework which is now made up of things, partially made up of things called sprints, where it comes from software. It's a term that comes from software development. If you're a software developer, you will go through these short periods of work that then get looked back on every few days. So you'll have a retrospective meeting every few days. And the sprint is basically the short period of work, and the work is basically cut up into these short sprints, and after the sprint you'll have a meeting, you'll have a retrospective to look back at it. What Evan is saying is that all work in all departments is now starting to, is supposed to now be mirroring this type of work. I don't know if you agree with that. Do you agree with that? Do you have a choice? Do we have a choice? I don't think we do have a choice. I think the age of waterfall is pretty much dead. We are now sitting in a very IT-dominated environment. And I think everybody is taken on the agile job description. You know, it's agile is going to be part of your job, no matter who you are. I mean, what do you think about that? You know.
Yeah, it's, you know, agile certainly is the way that we're doing, but I wouldn't coin it as agile, so to speak, even though I also agree with you that it is. Mm. That's where it's founded, but it's a way of work that's constantly retrospecting in your words, which is the agile method, but it's looking inwards, looking outwards, seeing what is the feedback we are getting from our clients, whoever that may be. Mm. For an HR, as a business partner, you maybe have somebody that's in finance, you're trying to service them in whatever you're trying to do. So what is the feedback that I'm getting? What are the sensors, in other words, through dashboarding, through communication? How is it that I can improve? Where can I improve? Having that humility. The digital worker, the disruptive employee, is someone who thrives, firstly under complexity, but applies humility in everything that they do, because you can't be holding things to yourself anymore. You need to be learning and unlearning as well from everything around you, and growing and getting feedback from those people that are count, and also setting metrics that are, as I said earlier, continually changing and upping the game.
Mm.
Never complacent.
Yeah, this continuous learning thing is amazing. I mean, you know, if you are sitting in any department, if you're in finance, if you're in tech, if you're in marketing, the messages that are coming through from HR is that we want you to be continuously learning about sort of how to do new things, which means that we are then fostering a environment of development and learning environment. This all comes from IT, I mean, as far as I can tell, you know, with a little bit of, psychology thrown in, the two seem to have come together there. You know, this continuous, the idea of continuousness certainly comes from there. It's the point is that nobody's immune, you know, you all have to come to the table. I think if you are inside an organization, you're going to have to come up against continuous learning, not against, but you're going to have to encounter continuous learning at some point. And once you do that, what does that mean? You know, what is continuous learning all about? Normally, there's within talent management, you know what? There's somebody who looks after that process. You know, the employee experience, which I started off talking about at the beginning, is made up of a whole bunch of touch points along, and that's the life cycle of the employee. There's certain touch points in that journey which make up the experience. You know, if you are not an employee, this is still interesting for you because these are things that people who are employees need to do, and maybe you can provide a service to them if you're not an employee. You know, so this might be of interest to people who aren't employees at the moment. Maybe you're not working for somebody. Maybe you are your own boss, but this could be interesting to you because you may be able to provide a service to a company that has employees. So along this journey of employee experience, you've got communication channels, you've got the benefits, the onboarding, the talent management, it's career pathing. It's really, there are components of talent management which are sort of selectively combined to create the journey that the employee goes on. And they are really, they characterize the relationship that any employee has with the organization. So it's like doing a survey or having a career path. It's your personal connection to the company. It's a personal connection. It's what's the connection between you as an individual, you know, Chaim Bacher, you know, whoever it is, and Nedbank, for instance, you know. And that's what the employee experience is. Incredibly, increasingly getting more and more personal is what I'm starting to see. And learning as a platform has now also become very IT-centric because learning is encapsulated in a learning technology platform. That's what the learning officer does these days. They look after tick boxing, you know, workplace skills programs generally. That's part of their job. You know, you've got to look at the legislation. You know, if we're talking about training, we're talking about training and education at work. As the learning and development officer, you normally have to look after workplace skills audits. You have to then do, there's the procedural legal part, and then there's the technological part of it as well. Sometimes it's just the technological part, which puts you in as pretty much somebody who's sitting behind a desk all day uploading information to a software program, and that's your job. Eva, I don't know if you've encountered this recently or you know, you've got any ideas about that. We're going to go to a short break and talk to Evan when we get back.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're on 101.9 Hi FM, and if you just joined us, this is the People in Perspective show with Saul Rosenberg and my guest Evan Kagan in studio. We're talking about the employee experience and the linkage with technology and how it's all changing now with agile organizations. We're also talking about the journey that certain people are on. If you're outside a company, you're not an employee. A lot of people aren't employees at the moment. I understand that. You know, it's you know, there's a high unemployment rate. It's, I think, interesting because you as an individual may be able to provide some kind of service to an organization that is going through these experiences with employees. A lot of organizations at the moment, just on that point, the hiring rate at the moment is still very low as far as I'm concerned. You know, the availability of jobs, we're not talking about unskilled jobs now, you know, with youth in, and I'm not talking about youth unemployment necessarily at unskilled youth unemployment. I'm talking about skilled general employment. You know, the employment rate is still quite low because companies are not hiring from external sources. They are hiring people internally first. If you do manage to find a way in, you're very lucky. Because in my experience, corporate has turned, you know, this comes, so the research is sort of ratifying this from, Korn Ferry, the silver bullet people. You know, they essentially, they back this up with some research saying corporates have stopped, the last 2 years, corporates have freezed up. They're not hiring people. They're basically going to go internal first before they go external, which means that a lot of people will remain unemployed for a long period of time. But I think the benefit of understanding what we're talking about now is paramount to whether you're employed or you're unemployed, because it can make your experience a whole lot easier. And, you know, the next time you go for that interview, you'll be able to go in with some knowledge and some experience. And so I hope we're helping you if you aren't currently an employee. What we were saying before the ad break is that we were talking about about learning and development as a skill, and as something that happens through HR and at a lot of companies. Also happens through contractors. Maybe you're working for a training organization. But it's become very tech-focused now, Evan. I think it's pretty much become like a, you know, working on a software program. That's the exercise.
So I wouldn't say it's a tech process. I think tech is an enabler, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I'm currently working with a learning and development team, which is all about how do you kind of create, in the flow of work, the ability to continually learn. So, yes, we're always going to be having, you know, the e-learning type of concept at your disposal whenever you want. It's got to be obviously very targeted. I want to have an opt-in option around what I believe is better for me based on what we discussed earlier on the job descriptions. How can I improve? How can I hit my metrics? And if you're having it in the flow of work, it's not just every 6 months or every year for a performance appraisal process where you get almost dictated to around, well, what should I be doing? What are the options? It's got to be very relevant. And even the most traditional organizations these days that I'm even working with are, they've kind of upped their game in this. So employees know what they're going to be, or have the option around what they believe with their line managers and colleagues. They can recommend what learning is best suited for them, for where they need to be growing. And then you have the tech-enabled stuff, right? So the tech enables that. So as I said, the e-learning and any other platforms that are integrated to performance management, whenever you do certain modules and you get a certain score on that, you're number one, building your own brand within the organization, and number two, you're able to show it from a performance appraisal point of view. So e-learning is no longer just a tick box exercise. Anybody on this level has to be doing these things, which are mandatory, but it's actually become an opt-in, what's suited for me, and the tech enables that.
So it's seeing it as an enabling factor is, I suppose it's useful for, you know, if you are a learning and development person, to be able to sort of, you know, do you identify as a learning and development person? Do you are you currently receiving learning and development from somebody? But basically, what Evan is saying is that there's a certain amount of experience which is being enabled by the process that you go through. So it's playing a role which sort of galvanizes. It really allows people to do the job a bit more easily. But Evan, the point is, how often does a normal employee get to actually talk about their particular job to a learning and development person? You know, that they don't often sort of have that opportunity to say, "I'm going through this in my job, and I want you to help me with that thing." Normally, it's in corporate.
Yeah,
it's basically it's a highly organized situation where you've got a team of people. It's all scheduled. learning and development is going to marketing on Tuesday, or learning and development is going to IT on Thursday, and we're going to do a sort of tick box. We're going to be doing a course on AI. We're going to be doing a course on Agile. We're going to be doing a course on, and it's set in the calendar, and it's going to be 3 days, and we're going to have 4 workshops, and it's going to be catered, and it's not going to cost employees anything, but we're going to open it up. That kind of thing, you know.
Yep.
So it's kind of organized. But at what point does the person receiving the training actually get to sit down with a learning and development person and get learning and development? Does that ever happen?
So it depends on the size of the organization, depends on the operating model, their structure.
Yeah.
But typically the employee, well, firstly, the status quo is, in the more Tayloristic or traditional organization, is that it doesn't really happen often,
yeah.
Right? You don't have that conversation. You kind of get told, after the 6-month review or the annual review, whatever it is that you guys have in an organization, then it will, off the back of those outcomes, the business partners will typically go and recommend what courses they should have, and then you have to go and do those things, or you obviously are encouraged to go and do it. The way it should work, however, is, again, it's in the flow of work. So as and when it's identified, let's say there's an individual, which I've recently had to kind of mitigate this particular risk. There was a team of people where there was a lot of bickering and moaning, and a bad culture, toxic culture was emerging in this particular department.
Mm, mm.
So what we had to do was to really nip it in the bud and really talk to self-mastery. So if, let's say, they knew what the purpose was of the organization, we identified kind of what are those obstacles in achieving this purpose, and culture was a big area of improvement. So what we did was, not only on e-learning, obviously it wasn't e-learning, it was we got a person like a Yochi Rez in, who would come and facilitate and take them through a process of introspection, of team development, etc. And then with outcomes. And then those KPIs, off the back of that workshop, it formed part of that person's KPI for the next few months, 2 months. So that, and then they had to constantly get the validation around improvement, for improvement. So that's how e-learning should be happening. Well, not e-learning, sorry. All learning and development should be happening. It's in the flow of work. It's not every 6 months or every year.
We're going to go to a short ad break. We'll be back shortly.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
You're on 101.9 Hi FM. This is Saul Rosenberg. You're on the People in Perspective show. Thank you for joining us. If you've been with us for the last 50 minutes odd, we've been talking about the work environment, about HR and the role that they play, and some of the new experiences which people are having. If you'd like to talk about your experience at work, you're welcome to WhatsApp us on 0618951019, 0618951019. We'd be very happy to hear about the experience that you are currently having at work. If it's positive, it's negative, how can we help you with that experience? We'd be very happy to hear from you. So, Aaron and I are talking about the learning and development cycle that people go through. And what we're saying is that often it's a very structured process and built into the workflow of the day, whereby on Tuesday we will have 3 workshops, on AI. On Wednesday we'll have 4 workshops on data management on Thursday. So it's all very sort of structured in terms of what workflows exist already. How much time is there for people to talk to each other? That's something that can be pondered on. I think it also depends on the company that you work for, where you've got the space. How much space do you as an employee actually have to ask questions? You know, is there a space that's been given in the culture of your organization? Is it encouraged for you to go and say, I have a question I need to ask. I don't understand something. You know, normally the wisdom is that of course you must ask questions, because how on earth are you not going to know, are you going to know what to do if you don't ask a question? Evan was saying something earlier, Evan, about asking a question once and then getting it wrong and then asking it twice. What were you saying about that?
Yeah, so if any individual wants to go and ask a particular question from a line manager or a fellow colleague, which may or may not be obvious.
Yeah.
Remember, you know, we obviously want to encourage people to be as comfortable, because when you're comfortable and engaged,
yeah,
then you start to become quite creative and productive and disciplined, etc. You're willing to go beyond the letter of the law with what you're doing, not just following a job description tick box.
Yeah.
So a particular individual was asking a particular question, quite a simple question, I must be honest.
Yeah.
And the feedback from the person that they asked was, well, isn't this just obvious? Like, why are you asking this question? Now, maybe because one of my strengths is interpersonal, like I relate, I've, you know, worked on my own stuff in my life and I'm working on it, and I could completely empathize because it's been done to me before. That's that ability to really put yourself in somebody else's shoes. So why is that person asking? They're obviously wanting to know something. Yes, it is simple, but come on. So it's going to take you 30 seconds to answer them, or maybe a minute. You have to show them something on the SharePoint or whatever the question is. So let them ask. Why must they feel scared to go and ask a question? What it does, and what this particular mail came back to me and said was, because he knows that I'm there, I'm helping this organization, he felt very disengaged, pretty much in tears, like he couldn't ask us. So he's been there for a month and a half, and he felt really bad. So yeah, we've just got to be so careful as to what culture are we creating, and getting that feedback from people. Like I said to him, like, you know, are you able to go and give that transparent and blunt feedback to the person? No, I'm scared I'll be fired. I can't do that. So what he's doing now is looking at alternate space to work. He's a very capable individual, passed with flying colors, all the psychometrics and all the other stuff. And so he's really a potential loss. And number one, in fact, very importantly, is that they've invested a hell of a lot of money into onboarding him, take him through those battery tests, which cost thousands and thousands of rands. And then he settles down, you got pay for the desk and all the things that needs to happen. And now, because of just bad management of people, bad management of people practices, you're losing a person simply because of this.
Terrible. I think it's when there's a disconnect between the structures that people have set up in a company in order to keep their people, and the informal, softer things that happen. When there's a total disconnect between, you can't totally foresee what the behavioral changes that may happen in a particular person. You know, it's like, as HR, how do you prevent this from happening? That's the question that I'm thinking about. I don't think you can prevent things like that from happening.
Well, it's all about, you know, what are the priorities around... What are the important things for us?
Yeah.
You know, like I was reading to you earlier before the show, is Bruce Woodfield posted on LinkedIn a quote from Stephen Kosov, which basically said, you know, we allow our people at Investec to go and fail forward as long as they're failing on behalf of benefiting the organization as a whole. But if they fail again, they're out. So it's a bit harsh. But they're setting the tone. They're encouraging failure. But when you have failed, and you know, it's all about, have I learned my lesson? And giving people the space to kind of do that. And I've given the analogy, I'm not going to now, I know we're short on time, but you know, the shift, the below the line on a ship. You know, what's below the waterline, what's above the waterline, what's going to sink the ship? If this person asks me a question and it's going to sink the ship, you know, maybe that's something we need to talk about if they're going to take that risk. But if it's just a general thing like, hey, you know, what's an extra 30 seconds out of your day going to do? Yes, we're all very busy, but too often we're busy doing things that are actually non-value add. And in my humble opinion, I think that giving somebody the time of day, if it's, you know, is going to be a value add to the great organization, the culture you create.
Yeah, thank you for that, Ev. I think it's going to be different from company to company. There's going to be a different way of doing things. I think that is quite harsh, you know, for the, what you said about gossip. But that is banking, you know.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's, you know, the outcome is money. You know, if you've seen you know, any of these documentaries about Wall Street and what happened there, you can see that, you know, you have why you have to be careful in these places.
Yeah.
That's one of the bad things, one of the things that can happen. But my point is that, you know, performance is something that's very personal. It's every person has their own performance goals. But I think the trick is for people to be as aware of what's going on as possible in order to match what their idea of performance is with what the company's idea of performance is. So ultimately, there has to be a connection between on that very deep level, what the employee believes in and their values, and what the organization's values are, and what the customer's values are. And all of those three things have to really sort of interact with each other. There has to be this total, that is what we're looking for in any organization, is the alignment of values between people, organizations. And hopefully we'll begin to start seeing that. Thank you for joining us. We're coming to the end of the show. If you'd like to get in touch for future, if you have a question, it's 0618951019. And we've had Evan Kagan. Ev, thanks for joining us as usual. And next week we've got Brad Shawkind on. So I hope you join us. He's also an expert in this area. And we're really going to build up some wonderful content for you for the rest of the year. So thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.